I'm going to read a portion of the third chapter of 2 Timothy. I'm sure you're very familiar with this, but we need to stir up our pure minds by way of remembrance. This know also, in the last days perilous times shall come, for men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasure more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. For this sort are they which creep into houses and lead captive silly women laden with sins, led away with divers lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Now as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds reprobate concerning the faith. But they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be manifest unto all men, as theirs also was. Thou hast fully known my doctrine, manner of life, purpose, faith, long-suffering, charity, patience, persecutions, afflictions which came unto me at Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, what persecutions I endured, but out of them all the Lord delivered me. Yea, all that will live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. You know, that is one verse that troubles me, because I have never, as far as I know, suffered any persecution. I've had an easy time. Oh, yes, I've had problems, but I've never been persecuted, to my knowledge. But evil men and seducers so wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. We'll come to this somewhat later, but not too much. Now I want to turn to Ephesians, the fifth chapter, for a jumping off point. Ephesians, the fifth chapter, and verse 10. It's a very short one, easy to remember. Now, that isn't the verse I want at all. It's the 16th verse. Redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Time, in God's sight, is a most important thing. He values it. He expects us to value it, and to use it wisely, and to redeem it. And I suppose there is anything in life where we misuse it more than we do time. Instead of using it wisely, so oftentimes we misuse time. Now, to illustrate it, turn with me to Isaiah, the 58th chapter. In the last two verses of this chapter, if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of the Lord, honorable, and shall honor him not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words, then shalt thou delight thyself in the Lord, and I will cause thee to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of the Lord hath spoken it. Now we can trace the ups and downs of Israel largely upon their use of God's time. God said to Israel, I'll give you 6 days, but the seventh is my day, my time. And I want you to use that time in a way that is honorable, in a way that will magnify my name. And if you do this, I bless you. You ride upon the high places of earth. And you will be richly blessed. And you will be an example among all nations. Now don't you use this day, my time, not for your own pleasure, or for your own joy, or your own delight. But you make it an honorable thing, something that will delight the Lord. And Israel's fate, so to speak, resulted from their misuse rather than proper use of God's time. Now, I presume one of the most devastating things to the life of the church today is the misuse of God's time, His day. Using it for our own pleasure and our own delight rather than the delight of the Lord. I think we can see it in our own work. I get most of the bulletins that are published by our churches, and they're doing a good job in mechanically and putting out some fine bulletins. I say that, but I see a trend. A very pronounced trend in using God's time, God's day, for our own delight and our own pleasure, in which you can't tell the actions of the church from the actions of the world. Well, many of our business meetings today are held on the Lord's time. Most of our Sunday school picnics today are held on the Lord's time, in which we go to the parks, engage in games, and raise hoopla side by side with organizations of the world, and for the life of you couldn't tell the difference one from another. And the church is suffering as a result of the misuse of God's time. Now, it's not that line of thought that I want to develop this morning, but I wanted to mention that because I believe that the misuse of God's time will be a detriment to the success of the church. I believe it's a mistake. A gross error to take our young people on a Sunday afternoon to the bowling alley and to places of pleasure, and to come back and the evening service is given up or discontinued because of the activity. So much for that. I'm not going to develop that too much later. Now, God has divided time into ages. And in Ecclesiastes, we have this statement. There's a time and purpose for everything. And God has an eternal purpose. And that purpose is divided into ages. And And if, while we're here, let's go back to Ephesians. Ephesians, the third and second chapters. First of all, Ephesians 3, 5. Which in other ages, or past ages, was not made known unto the sons of men, as it is now revealed unto his holy apostles and prophets by the Spirit. That is, that the Gentiles should become heirs of the grace of God as well as the Jews. Now, in other ages, past ages, but it's just the past ages or ages of the past. Now, the second chapter, we have in the seventh verse, that in the ages to come he might show the exceeding riches of his grace and his kindness toward us through Christ Jesus. So time is divided into ages. There is the past ages, and there are the ages to come. Now every age has had its beginning, and every age has had its ending. Every age has begun with a purpose, with opportunity, and possibilities. And every age has closed in a time of trouble and distress and perplexity and frustration and tribulation. And the present age is no exception to that. I was pleased with the emphasis in Brother Byron stress upon the nearness of the coming of Christ. In other words, the close of this present dispensation. Not only do we find it in the Word, but it seems as though God is raising up stones, as it were, to warn us that it is later than you think. So oftentimes that expression is used in the business world. It is later than you think. Men in all walks of life are telling us that it's later than you think. After the Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the scientists who created the atomic bomb in the Scientist magazine had their time clock, and their hands were set at 12:05. But then with the development of the detente between Russia and the United States, what seemed to be a development, the clock was moved back to 12:12. But of recent times, that hand has been moved forward until it's 12:03 now. Midnight hour time is passing. And repeatedly we are warned by Jesus and the prophets, both Old and New Testament, to watch. For the time draweth not. Prepare to meet thy God. And so on and so on. And Jesus repeatedly warned of this. Now we have the time of Jacob's trouble mentioned in Jeremiah. That time of trouble such as never was since there's a nation, even at that same time. Jesus spoke about that time, that great tribulation, not just the ordinary tribulations or periods of trouble that we have periodically in different parts of the world, but that great tribulation, such as never was since there is a nation, even to that same time, a time of trouble. And we're warned against that. Then We are told when Christ was born, the time of the star. Now, when the wise men came, seeking him that was born, King of the Jews, it was because they were looking for that star that would come out of Jacob. There was a time. Christ was born in the fullness of time, according to, born of woman, according to the law, and so on. So you see, God deals with in time, and his purpose is according to the times and the seasons. Jesus, in his great sermon concerning what shall these things be, the destruction of the temple and the end of the world, speaks about the times of the Gentiles. Jerusalem will be trodden down to the times of the Gentiles or until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And we have seen Jerusalem in history trodden down to the Gentiles. We have seen it delivered from Gentile domination and the flag of David flying over it. The times of the Gentiles are drawing close to an end. The book of Daniel is a book of the time of the end. Several times in Daniel, that expression is used, the time of the end. In the 12th chapter, I'll read this one verse, Daniel 12:4, a very familiar one with our people from the very beginning. But thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Now for 4,000 years, the world went on in the same old way, sort of the horse and buggy stage. The fastest means of transportation was by horse for 4,000 years. And the fastest horse on the racetrack would not be more than 30 miles per hour. But in your time, in mine, we've seen the breaking of that horse age. I remember my grandfather Chubby telling about an experience he had at Eden Valley, Minnesota. And Richmond was one of the towns not too far distant, and he was going over there one day, and he wanted to know how far it was. Oftentimes they wanted to know how far is it over Richmond. Well, he tied a white rag around the belly of the wheel, and then he sat there and counted the revolutions of that wheel. He didn't have anything else to do. The horses would go by themselves. And he measured the circumference of that wheel. He multiplied the circumference by the revolutions. He had the mileage. You know, they didn't have any nervous breakdowns in those days either. They had plenty of time to relax. But that was the horse and oats period. And the fastest means of multiplication was by the Chinese methods of the abacus, pushing some buttons on a wire. But now you take the computers, they deal in the multiplicity of numbers that staggers the imagination. In the last days, God said to Daniel, knowledge shall be increased. Why, a person that was wise to the ways of the world yesterday is behind times today. It's impossible to keep abreast with the developments and progress in the passage of time. Knowledge shall be increased and people shall run to and fro. Of course, that doesn't include us snowbirds that run down here every winter, but we're running to and fro today. Nothing wrong with it necessarily, but it is merely picturing the conditions that would result as the fall as a result of the increase of knowledge. The transportation has increased, and people are running to and fro today. Now, another development, and as time passes, we turn over to Luke, the 19th chapter. This chapter was used in part, but this particular verse, or these particular verses, were not among those. But we turn over to the 19th chapter, and we begin reading with about the 40th verse. This is following the entry of Jesus into Jerusalem. And he answered and said unto them, I tell you that if these should hold their peace, the stones would cry out. And when he was come near, he beheld the city and wept over it. You know, when people are asked to quote their favorite verse, you know what the one that is most quoted? Jesus wept. Maybe everybody knows that verse. And the majority of people, that's about the only one they do know. Here, this is one, the second instance in which we have those words, Jesus wept. Why did he weep? Let's go on. Saying, if thou hadst known, even thou at least in this thy day, the things which belong unto thy peace, but now they're hid from thine eyes. Now Jesus saw the city. He didn't weep because what he saw, the city, that that temple was going to be thrown down, not one stone left upon another. He didn't weep because the gardens of Jerusalem were going to be destroyed. He didn't weep because of the buildings that would be destroyed in the invasion of Titus. But he wept because of the people he saw, having no shepherd, sheep without a shepherd. And then let's go on. Saying, if thou hadst known even at this and this thy day the things which belong unto thy peace, but now they are hid from thine eyes. Saying, if thou hadst known even, for the day shall come upon thee that thine enemy shall cast a trench about thee and compass thee round and keep thee on every side and shall lay thee even with the ground and thy children within thee, and they shall not leave in thee one stone upon another, because thou knewest not the time of thy visitation. Israel had a time in which God visited them, because you didn't know the time of your visitation. And Jesus, seeing these people, what they had missed, oh, if you'd only known the peace that belonged to you, if you'd only taken advantage of the time of your visitation, but you let it slip by. Every generation has had its time of visitation. Our present generation is having its time of visitation is slipping away. The Gentiles have had their time of God's visitation. They're letting it slip from them. We turn over to 1 Peter, the 2nd chapter and the 7th verse. And Peter speaks about this time of visitation that comes sooner or later to all people. Unto you therefore which believe he is precious, but unto them is this the one I want? It's the, not the, it's the 12th verse. Having your conversation honest among the Gentiles, but whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may by your good works which they shall behold glorify God in the day of visitation. So this is our day of visitation, and the great mass of humanity today that have the opportunity. You know, there's very few people, if any, in these United States that don't have the opportunity except for the Lord. There's very few people in these United States that have any excuse whatsoever for not knowing about God. You can get a Bible in every Woolworth store for a few pennies. And if you don't have the money to buy it with their organization, that if you ask them, we'll give it to you. The day of our visitation is a day of opportunity. It's God's time and way we use it. Now there's the times of restitution spoken of in Acts 3rd chapter. The times of refreshing that shall come from the presence of the Lord. If these times are refreshing, these times of restitution are something to look forward to. It's the basis of our hope. But let me add this expression. I don't think that we will enjoy the blessings of restitution in the world to come unless we make restitution or practice it in the world that now is. Jesus said, if you bring your gift to the altar there, remember that your brother hath aught against you. Go and be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. That's restitution. Here and now. But restitution that is to come is a time of refreshing when there shall be showers of blessing. Joy unspeakable and full of glory. Now, coming back to Daniel again, the time of the end. And the Apostle Paul, in the lesson that I read you, described the conditions that would prevail in the end time. And I don't think there's anyone, no matter how erudite they may be, or how prolific they are with the pen, could describe present-day conditions in the time of the end more accurately and more plainly than the Apostle Paul did almost 2,000 years ago. This know also, in the last days, perilous times shall come. For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affections. Just with that word unthankful, a few years ago, the Secretary of the Traveling Men's Association in Michigan sent a letter out to all the members of the Salesman's Association, that state, urging them to stress thankfulness and to say thank you, saying that it seems as though people are forgetting to say thank you for the little favors that they receive from time to time. You give young people a ride. You do something for them and just observe how few will even say thank you. Unthankful, unholy. But I think this here has to do with giving thanks to God. In everything, give thanks to God for all the blessings you receive. But how many people stop? You go in a restaurant or a dining room and observe how many people will stop, whether they have the clerical garb on or whether they have the street shop attire. How many people will bow their head and thank God for the food that they eat. Unthankful, unholy, without natural effects, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. Having a form, to much of a religion today is nothing more than form and shadow living. And it's time of our visitation. This is our day. This is God's time for us. And may we take advantage of it and enjoy it now and receive the fruits of its blessings in the age to come.